welcome to a very special episode of Hype. For any new listeners, we are usually Hyperbole.com's weekly entertainment podcast. We have all the latest fandom news, but today we have gathered for a very, very, very special occasion. After much talk, we are finally going to have an episode all about Hamilton. Yay! Hamilton Hype? Hypleton?
Hypleton.
I like that one. Yeah, it's a good one.
Hypleton.
Yeah, so we'll go with that. My name is Marima. I'm one of your regular Hype hosts, and I did consider reenacting all of Act 1 with the various voices, but I thought perhaps I could do that as like a bonus later on. So instead, I've got like half of the staff of Hypable because we're all Hamilton nerds, and we're all here to talk about today. So it's going to be a fun time. We've got plenty to talk about, but first of all, let's all go around and kind of introduce ourselves and talk about our introduction to the show, because I think there are some people here who have not been on Hype before, which is fun. So why don't we start with Ariana?
Hi, I'm Ariana. Well, I've been pretty much obsessed with the Founding Fathers since I was George Washington in my fifth grade play. So I think I heard about Hamilton because you guys were tweeting about it all the time. And I was like, wait, is there really a Broadway play about Alexander Hamilton? And so then I looked it up and I realized that it was like, you know, filled with rap and diverse stuff. And so now I listen to the soundtrack like every day.
Cool. I'm Brittany. I've been on Hype once before when the whole staff was at Comic-Con. And I heard about Hamilton when it was at the Public, but I couldn't get tickets to it because it was still a really like hot show when it was there. And then I waited and waited and waited, and it finally came to Broadway. And then Natalie had a ticket, and Karen and I did not, who you will hear from in a minute. And I won the lottery. So Karen and I were able to see the show, standing room only, but it was amazing. So I've been obsessed with it ever since.
Yes, I'm Karen, and I first heard about Hamilton from a friend who got to see the preview because she was in school to be an actress, and they kind of got access to that sort of thing. And she was like, oh, Karen, you would love this. It's got rap and history, which are like two of my favorite things in the whole world. And then I saw the video of Lynn's performance for the president and just absolutely fell in love with it. And as Brittany said, she won the lottery and she made my life by letting me come with her. And even though I yelled in her face because she was like pausing while they were like, do you want tickets? And I was like, yes, I screamed at her, but it was worth it. And she forgave me and we had a wonderful time.
Hi, I'm Christina. I've never been on Hype, so this is my very first time. I got into Hamilton because I live in New York City, so I've heard some chatter about it over the summer when it was workshopped in the Public Theater and stuff. And then, you know, people would ask me, like, oh, what's that Hamilton show about? I'd be like, I don't know, some white guys, I guess, that are, like, rapping or something now. I had no idea. But then the soundtrack came out, and I listened to it all, and I was like, holy goodness, this is amazing. So now it is the only music I will listen to when I work out at the gym.
That's amazing. I should definitely try it as gym music.
It's fantastic.
It's very energizing.
Yeah, I feel like it would be good for cardio. Okay, so I'm Marima. As I said, I am a regular host on Hype. So if you tune into our normal episodes, you'll hear me talk about all kinds of things. I actually like work and study in the field of American history. So I have been kind of aware of Hamilton since it opened at the Public because there were lots of American historians who were very excited about it, nerding out about it. My boss saw it actually and was bragging to me about it. But I didn't get really into it until I was able to actually hear the music when the soundtrack came out. Before that, it was just kind of like an of interest thing that was kind of happening in the background. So yeah, the soundtrack came out and I did what I usually do with the musical theater soundtrack, which is listen to it nonstop for like 3 weeks in a row and try and learn it all with the voices. I kind of wasn't kidding about that. So yeah, now I'm crying over the fact that I will never be able to see it, but that's fine. I will just be sad in my house with the soundtrack playing on repeat.
I should also quickly mention, sorry, that I will be seeing the show next month. So anticipation.
My name is Michal. I actually have been a fan of Lin-Manuel Miranda since In the Heights, which was on, I don't remember the year, a long time ago. He won the Tony. It was amazing. Okay, cool. 2008. And I was kind of aware of him and what he was doing. And so when the video came out at the White House, I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, and watched along with everybody else. And kind of had it in the back of my mind as the mixtape, and was like wondering where it was going to be and, you know, and when it was going to come out. And then, you know, news started coming out. Lynn is very open on Twitter and was like, spent 6 hours working on the Hamilton musical today. Like, it was like, oh my God, you know, and it kind of grew from there. So because I'm obsessive, I actually did see it at the Public with my sister and brother and was in the second row. And it was a night that I will kind of probably treasure for the rest of my life. And then I like stuck around, and like the stage door at the Public is weird, but I got to say hi to Lynn, and he signed my program, and I was like, this is weird, but your son is so cute. And he was like, oh my God, you want to see a video? So he pulled out his phone and showed me a video of his son, and it was amazing. And yeah, been listening to the soundtrack a lot, and saw it again with most of my family on Thursday. So Hamilton's been in my life for a while, basically. I'm sorry, Marima. I'm not sorry. You live in Australia.
No one's sorry. All right, Natalie, to round up our cast of every single person who works on this website.
Yeah, so I am Natalie. I have not been on Hype before. This is my first time. And my Hamilton experience, I don't know, I can't remember exactly when I would have first heard of it. I've known about Lynn for a long time because this is actually weird. I'm a really, like, one of my biggest, most important television shows that I've ever been obsessed with is House. I don't know if any of you guys ever followed all of House, but he had like a semi-large role in the first part of a season of House. He was House's roommate in a mental institution, and it was like this very cool role, and I kind of always remembered him as that. And then
episodes of House I watched were those because he was on it.
Well, I love House, but I remember him very strongly from that, and he's done a lot of TV stuff, but very, very, very big Broadway, lifelong Broadway fan, like, you know, always watch stuff like Miscast, and he's been involved with it. You know, I know In the Heights, but I don't know it well because it's not a sung through show, and I've never seen it, so I don't know it as well as some, you know, sung through shows that I haven't seen, because I prefer listening to sung through shows if I haven't seen them in person. So knew him, started hearing about this early, I guess early this year. I definitely remember Karen kind of mentioning it when it was at the Public and trying to get tickets to the lottery there. And then I tried to get tickets to like the opening weekend of it on Broadway, which was going to be impossible because it was the last weekend I was meant to be in New York after our Comic-Con trip. But as you guys know, I had to leave that trip early, so I didn't get a ticket anyway, but I wouldn't have been able to go if I was. And after that happened, I became like weirdly determined that I had to see it. I saw the White House video, and it's kind of exactly what happened, what Lynn described in 60 Minutes recently, of this whole like, okay, this is really weird, but like by the end of the video, like you're totally like sucked in, and it's like the most important thing that you've ever heard. And there's just something about like that opening number, and it was just like, this is really important. And so I was coming back to the USA to do another trip for something else that I had to go to in Chicago, and I was kind of like browsing. I was like, can I get a Hamilton ticket? Can I get a Hamilton ticket? Found a single ticket on its own on StubHub for a like semi-reasonable price. Got it sent to Brittany's house, and I was like, right, I'm extending that trip to come to New York for 4 days just to see Hamilton. And I did it, and then I hung out with Karen and Brittany, and I did the lottery every day to try and get tickets. Didn't get any except for the day that I already had a ticket to go. So we all got to see it on the same night together, though I was in a different spot to them. And it was 100% worth like extending the trip, paying the money for the ticket, spending like, how many hours did we spend outside the theater, the Rogers, that week?
Like a little too many.
6 or 7 hours in total outside the Rogers Theatre. It was 100% like the best musical theater experience of my life as a lifelong fan of Broadway, and who like musical theater is like my most favorite form of storytelling. So yeah, I have seen it. I'm obsessed with it. Absolutely taken over my life. So yes.
Cool. Well, I feel like we have a good range of people who have seen it at different times, which is nice. I should say also, I am a huge fan of In the Heights, which I am also truly obsessed with that show, and I have been since that came out. But I just sort of don't really keep track of people in between projects. So when I remember at the start of this year, when all of this talk started about Hamilton in kind of my field, and I was like, oh, that sounds so interesting. And then they were like, yeah, it's this guy, he kind of does rap things. He did another show. I was like, Lin-Manuel Miranda? Is it In the Heights? What's happening? And I was just like, I feel like this musical was made for me personally, because it involves all of my interests in one place. So that's fun. All right. So we have lots and lots to talk about. We'll get into that. But before we do, I just want to remind everyone, if you want to talk about anything we have talked about today, or respond to anything, or ask about anything, or whatever, you can get in touch with us. We are on Twitter at Hyperbole Hype. You can leave a comment on the post of this podcast on hyperbole.com, or you can email us. We are hype@hyperbole.com, which is HYPABLE. I feel like I should have spelt that out Alexander style. That was a missed opportunity. I missed my shot. I threw away my shot. All right, get ready for a lot of those jokes. Okay, so let's talk a bit about the live show then, because I would like to hear more about it. So many of you guys have seen it in kind of the different stages. Because so many people are experiencing this show purely from the soundtrack, can each of you tell us maybe one moment or a couple moments, something that stands out to you that you get from the stage experience that you just can't get when it's not a visual? So who wants to start us off?
I made a list, but oh, go ahead.
Of course you did. Maybe someone else go first and then Natalie. Yeah, you'll be able to see what's marked off your list.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
I have just one thing to say. So Karen and I had standing room only tickets, so we couldn't see the upper level, like where the stairs go. We couldn't see up there because we were standing in the back of the orchestra and the mezzanine
Is so weird.
Yeah,
it's the weirdest theater I've ever been, weirdest Broadway theater I've ever been inside in, like, for the layout. It's really strange. Sorry, carry on.
But I think that, for the most part, listening to the soundtrack, the only thing that the visual adds to it is, like, the really awesome choreography that they have with these turntables, which you can see in the 60-minute special. They have turntables that turn opposite ways, and they're really cool. And I think that the 10 dual commandments is really, really enhanced. By watching it live, because the turntables are spinning different ways, and like if they make one wrong step, like they're going down. It's so unbelievable. But the costumes are fantastic. I think that the way it's very minimal, it's not overdone in any way. It's very bare stage. But that would be the only thing I would say, is that the turntables and the choreography that they do with the turntables is amazing.
I would also say that King George is so incredibly funny, and you get that on the soundtrack, but live, when you see his gestures and the way he throws fits and his dancing, it just takes it to a whole new level. And my friend who saw the preview of it saw it with the original guy,
Brian Dawson
and liked it. And then she listened to the soundtrack. She's like, I don't know if I like Jonathan Groff as much as I like the first guy. And I was like, oh, but he was so funny. And I kind of realized that I think it's because we each saw them separately. And you can't get how funny he is just from the soundtrack. I mean, it's the way that he kind of says the things he does is hilarious, but once you see it, it just takes it to a whole new level.
Yeah, and he's also present during the Reynolds pamphlet, and it's the best moment of the whole play. Oh. Like, it's the best King George moment. It's so good.
Well, I was going to ask, Michal, you had Reynolds, didn't you?
Yeah.
How was that?
He was really funny. I think he did a little more. He did almost like a Southern drawl at certain points, which was funny. He was great. His teeth are really white. I could see them from the mezzanine.
They are really white.
But I guess what I would say is two things. One, first of all, just the contrast between how straight they play certain elements, like the costuming, like the staging, versus, obviously the extremely modern, the acting is extremely modern. Obviously the characters are people of color and all that, which really kind of pops out and is a beautiful contrast in person. And also the girl woman dancer who is the bullet that you don't obviously know, because she doesn't say anything during the soundtrack. But during What's her first appearance? I forget. I think it might just be like during.
It's the final Stay Alive. Shot. Yeah.
Well, it is the final shot, but she appears once before.
Yeah. You know,
and it misses him, and she misses like a red coat fires at him, and like he's writing, and she like misses him a little bit, and then during the end, obviously, you know, he doesn't miss. So that was just a very powerful thing. That is like the stage is very busy, and it's easy to overlook things like that. But when you know what to pay attention to, like you should do your research before you see the show, because there's a lot of things that you want to keep an eye out on.
I mean, the choreography is a really big deal, especially like stuff like Room Where It Happens and stuff like that. But I think another really big aspect, at least for me and Karen and Brittany, and probably for Michal the first time she saw it, is that we saw it before the soundtrack came out. So we didn't know what was coming. And I don't know what it would be like to sit down like now, like knowing the show, if you know what I mean. But there were so many parts that just completely like in your face shocked me, like watching it without knowing the show first. And I'm really glad I got that experience, like satisfied. Like when that happened, like the rewind, like the turnaround, I was just like, holy shit, what is happening? And I was just like,
amazing.
So just shocked me so much. And there's little, I don't know, just with the show and the album, there's little bits of delivery that are going to change literally every time you see the show, like the tone, like the, you know, what the implication of like the way Angelica says, you know, a certain line or something gives it a different meaning. And you have to pick one version to go with for the soundtrack, but the show can give it a slightly different implication every time. Visually, this is a really small thing, but one of the things that I really loved visually that you don't get in the show, in the album, you hear it but you don't see it, is Philippa Sue as Eliza beatboxing during Philip's rap. It is cutest thing in the history of time. And you see it, she's done it in Ham for Hams and stuff, but it is so cute because it's so like mumly, like she like, leans over and it's like the sweetest thing ever. And hers again is like one of the other big things is after Philip dies, like she, it's not on the soundtrack, but like she like screams in this crazy, like heartbroken manner. And it's really confronting. So a lot of that kind of stuff, it's a really, you know, is a really big deal. But King George, I was like on the floor. Like I was like slumped down in my seat, like covering my face. Like it was the funniest thing I've ever seen in live theater. And I was just inconsolable. I couldn't deal with it. Those are the main things. And then there's obviously the one deleted scene, which I think someone asked about in the feedback, which we can probably talk about then.
Sure.
As well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's one scene, a spoken scene, and it's Lawrence's death. Like it's where, and so having that right before, Nonstop gives Ham's actions in that scene more of a kind of like, he's like repressed and he's just getting on with it, as opposed to it being, there's a little bit more to his characterization, that scene coming straight off the back of Lauren's death. But yeah, we can talk about that more. Someone asked at the end, I think. So, yeah.
Well, to that, there are also a few things that were cut from the public version of the show. So one of those things, the two major things that I'm aware of is there's a reprise of Dear Theodosia where Bird sings that, you know, Theodosia Sr. has died and he's singing a letter to Theodosia Jr., which is good, but I think it made sense to cut. They also cut the Whiskey Rebellion, though, which has a really interesting reprise of Outgunned, Outmanned, because Washington's like, you are outgunned, you are outmanned. And they also sing they sing One Last Time for the first time.
Mm.
And it kind of, like, I understand why they cut it, but it does lend a lot more kind of weight to Washington and his relationship with Hamilton. Because by the time he resigns, it's easy to forget about that relationship because you're seeing it mostly from Jefferson and Madison being like, they're so close, this sucks for us, you know, as opposed to that, like, comrades in arms type of thing.
I want to go back really quickly. Natalie, you brought up an interesting point when you said you didn't know the musical before you saw the show.
Mm.
And I, like, know every, you know, musical cue at this point. You know, I listen to the soundtrack every day.
Yeah,
my mother hasn't listened to a single song yet. And so I need to go home over Thanksgiving break and, like, have her listen to, like, the key songs, because there's so much you miss the first, like, five times you listen to music. You know, I want her to be able, like, your ears have to pick up that kind of dialect that they use and the varying speeds throughout the songs and stuff like that. So I don't want to have to be leaning over the entire time being like, oh, did you catch that, like, one line he said, or like that one reference that he made or something like that. So
in one way, it's really amazing to see it completely new. But in another way, if you want to appreciate, like, every single thing, like, and not get stuck covered up for laughs and stuff, you have to know the show, you know, before you go in. But it's easy to make someone very obsessed with the show, I think. Yeah. So.
I mean, it's like the whole rap music kind of genre that I'm, like, trying to tell people, no, it's not really, like, rap. It's good rap.
I've heard that so many times.
Well, it's not
I don't like rap.
Well, oh, yeah, no, Karen, you're a big rap fan, aren't you?
Yeah. Read that quote though from that's exactly what, like, kind of Lynn said, and that if you guys watch the 60 Minutes special, like, he, you know, and he says, like, looking back on it, like, that I've copied it verbatim, but that video is a microcosm of his entire Hamilton experience. I say hip-hop Alexander Hamilton and everyone laughs, and by the end of the song they're not laughing because they're in it, and because they're sucked into the story like he was sucked into the story. And it's such a perfect description of what happens, even if you're not into rap, even if you're not in musical theatre, like, even if you don't know anything about the Founding Fathers and are from Australia. Like, there's just something about it that all works together. Michal, did you get the John Adams rap in your public, or had they already cut it?
No, I didn't. That was just a down John, you fat motherfucker, yeah.
Yeah, so... Because I know there was a whole rap which they've put online from a Q&A that they did of a whole thing of him slagging off John Adams, and they kept just the last line from it as well.
According to my brother, I am continually curious actually why Adams isn't a character in the show. My brother is actually doing a deep dive, so he read the Adams biography, and now he's reading the Hamilton biography. And according to my brother, he thinks that Lynn might have left out Adams because their interactions don't make Hamilton look very good.
Yeah, and I think.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have seen the John Adams miniseries, but Hamilton does not come off looking great in that.
And I mean, it is funny because I've been a fan of John Adams since I saw 1776 in seventh grade.
I feel, from what I know so far, I feel kind of sorry for him, but I don't know what he actually did.
He's definitely a flawed person, but I think that
he loved his wife.
Hamilton's not exactly, you know, shining star in his own right, but
exactly, yeah, which is another interesting thing, because the one thing that finally made me comment on the New York Times website was their review of Hamilton, and, you know, Ben Brantley is not an idiot and gave it a glowing review, but there were people writing like, oh, but are there any songs like Carousel or blah blah blah, what will stick with you, and like, I can't believe this show is showing Hamilton as like a perfect person, and it's like, actually, no, he comes off as an extremely complicated man, a genius, but an extremely complicated person who had real issues with personal loyalty. That was the one thing that made me comment. Like, out of everything in politics, that's what made me comment.
I read that Ben Brantley review. I think he said something like, I don't like to tell people they should mortgage their house, but it would be worth it for Hamilton.
Yeah. I told my mom to get tickets.
Yeah.
So I sent that to her, and then she's like, okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we've kind of worked our way around to it. Anyway, let's talk a bit more about the music. How do we want to do this? Maybe let's start with some of our favorite songs, and I imagine people have many things to say about these. I guess we'll start with Act One with some of our favorites. So why don't we start with Karen?
To be completely fair, I like every song, and that doesn't happen all of the time. But I can listen to the soundtrack from start to finish on a loop. Like,
yeah, I never.
I fall asleep to it every night and wake up with it still playing and continue to listen to it throughout the day. So I love every song, but in Act One, my favorite one is Right Hand Man. And I think I like it so much because I like the Here Comes the General part to it. And I think that it's a great introduction to Washington, but I also just really like Ham's part in it too. And Burr kind of getting shut down a little bit. Can't say I don't enjoy that a little bit, but just the way that it transitions between, it's kind of, the song kind of has like two parts, and the way that it transitions between those I think is really interesting.
I feel like it's a good setup for the three of their dynamic as well when you're listening
to it. Yeah, definitely.
I am going to say from Act One, I feel kind of similarly, and I kind of feel bad choosing a favorite song because, like, it really just depends on the day and what I'm listening to. I like how we all say on the day because we all just assume at this point that we listen to this every day of our lives, which is what we do.
True. It's true.
I think for me, like, really my favorite song probably of the show is Satisfied, but for the purposes of this exercise, I'm going to actually say the Skylar Sisters, because when I first listened to the recording, I already was aware of most of the historical aspect. I knew that it was rap. I knew all of that. So none of that was especially surprising to me, but I also have a background in musical theater and I studied music. So the most interesting musical moment for me was when that song started, because it kind of is the start of hinting that there is a lot more in this show than just the first four songs kind of keep to the same theme, because they're building you into it. And I think they do a really good job of that. But that show was, that song, I should say, was the song that kind of made me sit up and really think, oh, like, there's a lot more going on in this. Not that I was surprised by that, because it's Lin-Manuel Miranda, but it just took me by surprise anyway. And so every time I listen to the soundtrack, I still kind of get a little flash of that moment when I listen to it, which is really fun, because yeah, that kind of grabbed me the first time, and I don't know what it was about. I think just that it was very different from what had come before it. But Natalie, I see you've also put that down. Did you want to add something to that?
No, I just love it. Like, I don't know why. It just makes me, like, it just, like, I don't know. It makes me cry. They all make me cry. But I just think it is really powerful. I really, I know they wrote it quite late, and I know that was, because the guys like Lack and Lynn were talking about, like, these women are so cool, like, they're so powerful, they so have many opinions. I wish we met them earlier in the show. I wish we met them before Alex meets them. And I think that was just such a good choice, like, for them, if you know what I mean. I think it's just so clever. And, like, Angelica, like, it's like, You get the picture, like, you know, if it had been the 21st century, like, she would have ended up being the president, you know, like, and it's just, I don't know, I just really loved it. And I also kind of really love the kind of, I guess, the irony, like, of the lyrics, like, the history is happening in Manhattan, we just happen to be in the greatest city of the world. And that's kind of, like, what Hamilton makes me feel about Broadway as well. And it's all very, like, I just really, really love it. I have many favorites in Act One, though. Like, quite a few people have said Yorktown, which I think is almost a better everything coming together end of Act One song than Nonstop. Though I do really love Nonstop for the, like the why do you write, like, you're running out of time, and that whole big, like, kind of anxious ending to Act One. But yeah, it's really hard to pick one. So. Yeah,
we all feel that pain. But other people have Yorktown as well.
Yeah.
So that obviously stands out. Christina, did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I usually wake up every day with a line in my head, and that line from that song becomes like the song of the day kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I usually just kind of – I've started just tweeting quotes from lines of the musical, knowing people will pick it up. So today it was Yorktown with And so the American experiment begins with my friends all scattered to the winds, which is an amazing line in itself. But, like, the other day it was Helpless and, like, I am so into you. Like, just those riffs or, like, those really powerful lines that stick out amongst all the other line, like, all the other music. Like, there's just so much of it that it's hard to always pick a favorite one. And Natalie took the words right out of my mouth with Nonstop. At the end, when there's that accumulation of Satisfied, Helpless, you know, it's one of my favorite parts in the show because it gives me the opportunity to listen to every single song at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, it's just all of them together in, like, one massive crescendo of a Act One finale.
Yeah. I actually agree. I thought the first time I saw it that we were breaking for Act Two.
That was the end of the act. Yeah.
Yeah. It really plays like that. And I mean, thematically it does too, because the war is over. But I just love the way it kind of blends rap and lyricism. And, you know, the world turned upside down, obviously, is an amazing refrain that comes through. And it's true. That was an actual drinking song. And that apparently those soldiers did sing on their way out.
Ariana, you have Satisfied, which I'm also on board with. So why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, well, this is my favorite song just because Angelica is, like, my favorite character. But I just really enjoy this song because I think that it's – she is really exemplifying, like, a woman's role during this time period and how frustrating it must have been, especially for someone as like brilliant as her. And a lot of times the founding mothers, they don't get to have their say a lot in these kinds of historical representations. So I really enjoyed that.
I totally agree. I also feel like Renee is amazing, and I would like her to play every role in this show, which we will get to when we talk about Ham for Ham. This is great because these are all my favorites. Everything's my favorite. But Brittany, you have Wait For It, which I also think is like one of the masterpieces of the act in terms of like a real great musical theater song as well.
Yeah. Plus you just have like Leslie Odom Jr. making your knees weak because he's amazing and he gets to like just belt this number and it is so good. And it really like, it takes the show to a completely different level because you're not expecting it. And he is just so good. Oh my gosh. He is so good. I love him. But yeah, Wait For It was the one that when we left the show, I couldn't get out of my head. And then when NPR released a preview of the album that Friday after I saw the show, I did not stop listening to it. It was just on repeat the whole time. It was so good.
Yeah, I feel like that one definitely was in my head also. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit about our Act Two favorites in a minute, but I wanted to talk kind of about the music in general. We mentioned some of the influences, the rap influences. There's obviously a lot of musical theater influences in this show as well. Christina, you wanted to talk kind of about the wordplay and the different kinds of music?
It's just very clever. And I think we all, you know, we're all writers and stuff. And like, we all read a lot and listen to a lot of music and consume a lot of media. But there's something about this show that there's a reason Lin-Manuel Miranda was just declared a genius, you know?
Literally.
Actually won the MacArthur Genius Grant Award or whatever it's called. I don't even know how to articulate it, and I'm really sorry for that, but like there might not be a way really to describe how this musical is so transformative. And we might talk about this later, but like both in the Broadway community, for the rap community, for like top 40 pop music, radio airway plays community. When you listen to some of the songs, like some, I'm trying to think of an example. Well, you can take any example, but it's so clever. And I really, really wonder kind of how that writing process went from it really honestly takes my breath away. You know, as someone who doesn't really like rap but is a really big fan of Broadway musicals, I was stunned. I love it.
I think the biggest thing and the most important thing is that it's not like in any way a parody. Like you hear like, oh, founding fathers, you're going to think it's a parody. That's kind of what people jump to when they hear about two things that aren't necessarily the same kind of, you know, genre, time period, or, you know, same kind of tradition. But you kind of see it and it's like it couldn't have been any other way. Like every song couldn't have been any other way. And I know, again, one of the things Lin has talked about is that he thinks that, it, you know, rap is the only genre that it would have worked for it because of the density of the way Ham wrote and thought. Like that was like, you know, that it was never going to work in, you know, there was no way to make him more concise, and so that they had to make him faster. And so there is that aspect, but it's just the earnestness of it and the fact that it's not, you know, every reference works, every Broadway reference works, you know, every rap reference, every, you know, 21st reference, every 18th century reference. I think there's one line in 10 Jewel Commandments where he rhymes inexperienced and ruinous, like total old-fashioned 18th century slang with, so we're doing this, you know, in like, you know, it's really like just everything fits into place in a way that it is. It's impossible to describe. There's no tongue-in-cheek element to it. It is like just clever and respectful and perfect for what it is. And I don't know how he did it. Like, you know, everything makes sense. Like King George, his stuff is like exactly, you know, a complete and utter juxtaposition in the exact way that his government was a complete and utter juxtaposition. Like, it's just, I don't know. I don't have the vocabulary or the knowledge to explain why it works, but that's the best I can do.
Well, let's talk about King George for a second, because I think he did something really, really interesting with this, just from a musical point of view. Obviously, the juxtaposition in terms of the like content of the government and the comparison of that, that's like pretty obvious. But for me, when I'm listening to the soundtrack, what he's actually done with King George is he's subdivided the show, and he anchors the show as well through that. And it gives a point of reference for people who may not be familiar with the other styles that make up the rest of the show. But I think it also divides it fairly clearly into these four sections with his song and then the two reprises. Yeah. It keeps it accessible. And the music of that is, you know, this kind of Brit pop music is very, you know, it stays in your head. Unlike some of the other songs, maybe you can keep up with what he's saying because it's a lot slower and it's kind of fun. And as you have said about the staging and the performance, like it's very engaging for the audience. So even when you're listening to it on the soundtrack, I found that to be a very interesting choice to do that. And he's done it very obviously because he hasn't given him any other songs. He sings the same song every time, you know.
It's really interesting to me that you guys say that his, like, that King George, the traditional Broadway stuff, is like the more center point or the focus, because, or even like what Christina said earlier when she was talking about how it's like a Hamilton rap. No, but it's good rap, to try and get people to listen to it, because I found kind of like the opposite in trying to get like my family to get into it.
They're like,
because,
oh, it's not real Broadway. Like, it's not real Broadway. That's the beauty.
I'm like, no, it's like rapping Broadway. It's cool. It's cool. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, okay, then I guess I'll listen to it.
I just find it funny because, I mean, I'm doing the same thing, like, you know, trying to coax people from the musical theater point of view. But it's funny how this show has kind of become a, like, a pop culture thing. Like, there was a thing, there was a little piece in People about it, and about, like, oh, Hamilton's not just hot on Broadway, celebrities are coming to see it, like, real celebrities. Like,
it's like Game of Thrones or something. It's like the thing that people,
And it was, and they also said the musical about Andrew Hamilton.
Oh,
like, okay. I think when Lynn came out with In the Heights, it was sort of a, like, oh, that's cute. Like, oh, you're going to tell the story of, like, people in the Heights and, like, their musical language. That's so cute, you know? And now it's like, no, you actually have to take it. And In the Heights, to be fair, is lighter.
It's tongue-in-cheek. In the Heights, this is not tongue-in-cheek. There is nothing ironic about Hamilton, whereas In the Heights is slightly...
Well, no, there's plenty of irony in the show, but there's
I don't mean, like, ironic, like it's not... Yeah. Like, the idea
of... It's not like, ha ha, Thomas Jefferson is black.
Yeah, right. Yes, irony in the lyrics, yes, but the concept is not ironic.
The Roots produce this album, like Jimmy Fallon's house band, which might contribute a little bit to that kind of universality of music, because they're fantastic musicians, no matter which way you cut it. So, like, their influence might probably have, like, swayed maybe more, less Broadway-specific and kind of more into that other genre focus.
Yeah, I want to hear from Karen, because you are a huge rap fan, and not that, like, I enjoy rap, but I definitely don't have the breadth of knowledge to draw in for, like, this kind of conversation. So do you want to talk a little bit about how you felt about it? Because you were already a really big rap fan, so you kind of have a different perspective.
Yeah, rap is my favorite kind of music, and the reason that is because of the lyricism, because of the density of it. I just feel like you can pack so much more information into these songs, and they can tell a broader story, and that's what Hamilton is doing as well. Natalie said when it was like, you know, Lynn said, you kind of can't do it any other way because of Hamilton's, the way that he thought and he wrote, you need this sort of density to tell his story. And I think that makes complete sense. And with the lyrics, they're so complicated, not just in terms of the words and the story that they're telling, but the lyricism of it, the way that they rhyme. It's not just couplets. It's not, you know, grade school rhyming. Everything within the sentences plays off of each other, and it is so brilliant that I, you know, like you guys are saying, I can't even describe it. I can't even wrap my head around it. But funny story was, partway through, I think it was Act Two.
Yeah, Brittany, it was during Jeffrey. Yeah, it was my favorite moment of seeing the play with a group of people, because besides the fact that whenever like the piano key hit and you knew that King George was going to come out, the audience just went nuts. But during Jefferson's rap in Act Two, Karen at the end of one verse just went, "Oh!" Like she was just so into it and loved it so much. It was brilliant. It was so good.
Yeah, and when you're watching this play for the first time, it is an onslaught. It is hard to catch everything in it. But when Jefferson says in Washington on Your Side, if Washington isn't going to listen to the disciplined dissidents, this is the difference. This kid is out. I was just like, how the hell do you do that? And some of the raps are so incredibly fast, and it is so hard to be able to do that at the pace that they do. And it blew my mind. And, you know, I was trying to be good, but that noise just came out of my mouth because I couldn't hold it anymore. I was so excited for it.
Something that I feel like doesn't get enough credit is the genius of the music itself in this. Obviously the lyrics are amazing, the style that he uses are amazing, but like the actual construction of this from a musical point of view, the leitmotifs that are associated with each character, like it's very operatic in a way, and it's obviously you can hear like a Les Mis kind of vibe from it at times. We have so much else we want to talk about, but I know everyone wants to say their Act Two favorite, so let's just run through these a little faster. Maybe let's just go through the list, starting with Ariana.
Yeah, so my favorite song is the last one, Who Lives, Who Dies, Who Tells Your Story, and it's just because this song, it really gets me every time. I don't really cry during songs, but I do cry for this one. And my daddy's a huge American history buff, and I knew he read the Hamilton biography, so when I was telling him about this musical, one of the first things he told me was, oh, that his wife was so remarkable. And I think that finally in this song, we do get to see that about Eliza, because she's such a subtle, quiet person. But then at the end, you realize that she was really amazing on her own, and she did a lot, even after her husband's death.
Mine was Hurricane, because I think, again, this is one that's also really cool to see staged, because it's very slow and it uses the turntables a lot. But I don't know why I love this song. I think it's because I stopped listening to Act Two after Philip gets shot, because I mostly listen to it in public and I can't handle it. So I kind of stop after a while. Like, I literally get to the songs and I turn it off. Like, I start over again. Mm. But yeah, Hurricane is definitely my favorite. I love, like, most of the stuff that goes on within the government, but I think Hurricane's just a great moment for Hamilton.
My favorite one is What I'd Miss, because I love Jefferson. I think he's hilarious. What I'm pretty much saying is that I love David Diggs because he's hilarious and he has wonderful hair. But it's just a really funny song and kind of picks it up a little bit more. And yeah, it's fun. I couldn't pick one of the sad ones because they make me cry too.
I'm going to jump in here to jump on What Did I Miss, because, again, that was the song in Act Two that kind of made me be like, oh, something different. I love the jazz-inspired take on that. I think it's really interesting for Jefferson's character. I think it makes it really interesting in terms of the music. It gives a very distinct vibe to Act
Two. It's symbolic as well of him being like a slightly older generation than like Ham and his friends and the rap, and it's really so clever.
Yeah.
So mine might be a little bit unconventional, but Say No to This. When Hamilton, I guess, starts his affair with Mariah Reynolds.
Oh, that's a great choice.
Yeah.
There is something amazing about it when it hits that first chorus, and it, when it really goes into like that big no, and like there's like harps that come in or something. I listen to it on full blast in my headphones, so I pick up like every single little instrument that's playing, and it is very moving. Like it's, and then when he goes running to her place and is yelling at her and stuff, it's such a fantastic song.
And it has the most genius musical theater reference in the show in it as well.
At the very last line, it's nobody needs to know. And it goes into the chord progression from the last 5 years, which was, what is it? Robert Brown.
Jason Robert Brown.
Yes.
Yeah.
Robert Brown.
It's really big song about clever. Infidelity, basically.
Yes. It's really good.
I'll say, I mean, I, like I said, I love the rap battles. Like I also said, I don't listen to Act Two that much. I mean, Washington on Your Side, everything, they're awesome. I will say that I do not like It's Quiet Uptown. I don't think that that's
interesting.
A great song. And I think that it's also a little out of touch with the times, because it's like, the whole idea of the song is that, like, they're working, you know, the Hamiltons are, like, experiencing this unimaginable tragedy of losing their son. And it's like, actually, that was highly imaginable. Like, people died young constantly at that time. And, I mean, Theodosia Burr, in slightly stranger circumstances, but she died at young, you know. I mean, for me, that song, I would have preferred, like, a duet between Lynn and because they're like interchangeable in my head, between Hamilton and Eliza personally.
First of all, I really like, I do really disagree. It's Quiet Uptown is one of my favorite moments of the show. Like, I think it's really, really beautiful, and for me it does really work, and I think some of the lyrics are super great. But my favorite song probably in the entire show is Take a Break. And that's my favorite. I don't know why, it's just my jam. I think it's the opening, like the Macbeth paragraph is one of the cleverest things I've ever seen in my entire life. And I just love it. I love the kind of duality of the relationship with Eliza and Angelica, their relationship with each other, the introduction of like Philip, you know, as a kid. And it's just, I just love it. Like it's my, yeah, probably my favorite number in the whole show, but yeah. And we're going to do lyrics, but it's too long to read the whole thing out. But my favorite lyric in the show is that, that Macbeth in letter to Angelica. So I love those three together. They could have worked it out, you know. I won't go too much about history, but that thing about that, if you really loved him, if you really loved me, we could share him thing was that's a true historical fact, that she did actually say something very similar to that to Eliza in real life. And yeah, it's a shame those crazy kids couldn't work that out. But yeah, I just, I'm obsessed with it. Sound, lyrics, everything.
Okay, so we are going to do our favorite lines, but I think we're going to save those to the end, because mm-hmm. I would really like to talk about the historical aspect of this, because that's me, I'm a history nerd. First of all, I guess, has anyone read the book? Has anyone read the Hamilton biography?
I have it. I haven't finished it yet, but I've read a lot online as well, like a lot of the original letters and stuff online.
I just get updates from my brother.
So. Oh, yeah, you've got, like, the source. And sounds like Ariana does as well. With her, was it your dad who's really into it?
Yeah, my dad's read it.
Yeah. I'm, like, about 150 pages into it. I have to say, for anyone listening who hasn't read it, it's very, very readable. It's, if you're worried about it being, like, a kind of dense, boring history book, like, no, it's incredibly accessible. He writes in a very kind of popular, engaging way, so don't worry about that. Even though the page count looks intimidating, it's very, like, digestible, and I would definitely recommend it if you're interested in it. I am not an early Americanist, so this is, like, not my area of expertise by any means, but I do think it's really interesting that there does seem to be this phenomenon of, like, people not only becoming obsessed with the soundtrack and wanting to go and spend all their life savings on seeing the show, but then also wanting to read all of these letters and, you know, not just going to read the book, but like Natalie said, going to read the letters and going online to research about all of these characters who, I mean, they've been around for a while. Like, we could have done this ages ago, but we haven't. So I'm wondering, like, what it is for those people who have, or maybe those people who haven't felt that need to do that. Like, what is it about the show that drives you to do that kind of deep dive into Hamilton and the history of these characters?
Most recently for me, there's a line in Nonstop when they're in court and Hamilton's like, I intend to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, which is a real, like, legal phrase here used for evidence and all that kind of stuff. And I took a calm law class and was very interested in that. So I tried to do some research actually to see if Hamilton had set the precedent for that for our legal system. But it was strange because there was no record of it
before like the mid 1800s or something. So I don't know if he actually did that or if Lynn just kind of put that in there as like a legalese term. But I, beyond that, I haven't really been interested in it. Like I had to memorize the Federalist Papers for a class in high school and they all went completely over my head. I hated them so much. But if I had listened to like Hamilton when I was, you know, 5 years ago, I would have been so much more interested in it.
Yeah. That's the big thing for me that I wanted to kind of talk about, or that this kind of the reason I think that the show is important is because I love a lot of biopics. I like I've got a lot of, you know, things similar to this or really good biographies or things like that. I think that as soon as you get emotionally invested, like in the personal story of something in history, that it is an amazing tool for education, and that more education should be empathetic. Because I was I did very badly at school because I didn't care about anything. But if I was at school now or studying something, and things were taught to me, even if it was not something I chose, even if I studied American history and I didn't want to, not that we do nothing about this in school, by the way, in Australia. Like I knew none of these people at all. Like I know George Washington was the first president, but like I know nothing about it. So, but if they teach stuff in an empathetic way and remove like the remoteness of the period, I'm not saying everything has to be a rap musical, but like tell the stories, don't just tell the facts. Then, because there are high school kids now who are going to ace their finals because they know everything there is to know about Alexander Hamilton, you know? I don't have anything like that. I didn't have anything like that in high school that I cared about that much. I had this, you know, the books of my personal things that I cared about. But I think in education that you introduce empathy and you introduce being invested in a story, or you teach a story in a way that, you know, makes you like care or amazed at what people were doing as opposed to this remoteness.
Yeah. I mean, I think I probably just had really amazing teachers, but I remember like in eighth grade, my teachers being like, yeah, oh my gosh, you know, they're so cool. Like, oh, they were best friends, but then, oh, that then he cheated on his wife. And it sounded like this telenovela, and it was like awesome. That's but I remember everybody like in my class being super into the founding fathers.
Because as soon as I'm personally invested in something, like, you know, of a historical period, I do want to research it. I do want to know the facts about it. And I can like reel off, you know, like, plenty of information that comes from being personally invested. And I think that, you know, that is a major key for education that Hamilton is a really good example of, but that, you know, that is the way that teaching things like history or things like literature, you know, should be.
In terms of the impact, like there is now, there's a program that basically every public school 11th grader or something in New York City has is going right to be able to see Hamilton. And they're doing like units in school on it. So it's not like, I mean, this stuff isn't in a vacuum. And like, just to me that like, forget the impact on musical theater and pop culture. Like you could potentially be creating scholars or, you know, future musical theater, you know, geniuses too. Like it's kind of incredible.
Mm. I find that interesting that you say about, you know, there is like this whole, we're basically raising a generation of people who are now going to like ace all their classes. Because of course, if you only pay attention to what's in the show, you're not going to ace your classes because a lot of it isn't right. You know, it's the story. It's not the facts of what happened.
And also, this is like half a chapter in a U.S. history book.
Right.
It's not an all-encompassing course.
Yeah, if you took a class on Hamilton cradle to grave, like then you, this might help you out. But but otherwise, that's interesting because I think what Lynn has done, and he's done it very well, is he has kept the general shape of the history and he's kind of flattened the details to make it work for, you know, the time constraints that he has and the story he's trying to tell and the characters that he's interested in. As we have mentioned, like some people were there and like they're just not in the show. So do we think it matters that it's not historically accurate, or is it not a big deal?
I think that if you go in knowing that it's not historically accurate, it's fine. I mean, look at Inglourious Basterds. Like, if you do not realize that Hitler did not die that way, then I'm sorry, but maybe you need to go back to high school. Same thing, okay, with this.
This is accurate than Inglorious Bastards.
Oh, yeah, let's cut that out.
Quite historically accurate for what it tries to do. So.
Right. But what I'm saying is that going into this knowing that you have to go, I mean, that's why I want to read the book. That's why I want to look up a lot of these things, is because I want to know what's fact and what's not. I think as a story, it is incredibly compelling, but you need to know going in that, yeah, it might not be 100% accurate. The fact of the matter is that it makes you interested in knowing about the history. And that is the important part, I think, for kids everywhere, is because it's going to make them go, oh, wait, history can be interesting?
Yeah.
I never knew that. And then they're going to feel compelled to go find out the fact, or, you know, find a different part of history that they're interested in, that they want to explore further.
Well, I think also, too, just our personalities. Like, we all come from very obsessive, like, when we find a new TV show or something we like, we obsess over it. We find out who the writers are, who, you know, how characters are cast and all that stuff.
We're so, like, Andrew, can we cover this show on...
exactly, yeah. So it's like... It makes sense, but there is something to be said with psychological, you know, stuff being intrinsically motivated to learn about something helps you retain it better. So, you know, instead of just reading like Hamilton was killed by Aaron Burr, you're like, oh,
why? Well,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just a line. But if you're like, oh, Aaron Burr had this big beef with him and like shot him when he didn't really mean to or something, it becomes an entirely different situation.
The big thing for me, I think, is kind of what Karen said. It's more actually the accuracy, I think, is something that comes later. And I think that it's necessary, you know, for storytelling purposes, you know, for things to be shifted around or for, you know, stuff to be condensed. That's fine, you know, if you know that. And I think that's something that you assume about kind of any work of fiction, even if it's historically based. What I think is more important than that is that it gets people invested in a story. You get the investment, emotional investment, that makes people want to research, a lot of people. But it also, it's not just like, oh, we only care about Alexander Hamilton. The idea of the investment and that kind and the taking away of the remoteness means, at least I'd hope, means for people that they would kind of feel like that about all things, like that they're just going to not see things in general, like history in general, or people from other generations in general, as remote. You're like, these people throughout all of time, situations throughout all of time, all have these human aspect. I can tell stories about any of these, and it's going to be a real thing. It's not, you know, it's not like some remote thing that where, you know, people didn't feel the same way or that people didn't talk the same way. I mean, they didn't, but there's a way to translate any situation. And I think that once you get invested with one thing that does that, it opens up your mind to caring about a lot more things, if that makes sense.
If I could draw a contrast to between this and, well, actually a dual contrast, because the only other Founding Fathers-ish musicals that I know of personally are 1776 and Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. Mm. I think 1776 is kind of successful in this way, although obviously I don't think it would speak to a lot of young people today, because that is like, if you're thinking about a musical, that is a musical.
It's real musical, yeah.
And Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, which came out a couple years ago, tries to do what Hamilton does, which is modernize and like, you know, make populism about like getting what you want in life. And to a certain extent, it's successful and it was very well reviewed at the time. But I think when you look at it in contrast to Hamilton, you kind of see what you would kind of really need to do in that case. And I mean, Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson had other problems than it not being Hamilton, one of which is the fact that its subject is an extremely controversial figure who they didn't really kind of focus on that. But I didn't really feel like, oh my God, like I did Wikipedia Jackson because I'm weird like that afterward, but I wasn't like, oh, I need to seek out a biography of him. I'm not really doing that for Hamilton, but I'm a lot closer, you know?
Also for Hamilton, in terms of the history aspect, I think what it does also very well, I'm just really obsessed with like process of things, guys. I like to know how things work. The actual historiography of Hamilton, as in the like study of history itself, not just like telling what happened, is insane. It's so meta and it's so good. And part of that is, I think, why like you know, there was so much buzz about this, at least in, you know, my workplace and people that I work with, when it first came out, because his grasp of history is just incredible. Like, you see it all through the show in the focus on narrative and on storytelling and the lack of control that we have over that. But you also see it very overtly, I would say, in two songs, aside from, you know, Washington Seeing Who Tells Your Story. You see it in Burn, when Eliza destroys her letters, which is so smart. I can't explain how smart this is. In terms of recognizing the lack of history that we have for her, because she kept everything that Hamilton wrote, right?
Such
she
a good way of doing it.
She didn't keep what she wrote. She didn't think it was important, or no one else kept it. And it recognizes that, you know, in history, a lot of what we have, it just determines, like, it depends on someone saying, hey, this is important. Like, we should probably hang on to this. And so we don't know why we don't have all of her letters, probably because she's a woman. And there are these huge gaps in women's history. Like Ariana said at the start, we don't know that much about a lot of the women who were surrounding these men. And that's because there aren't the materials there. And so the way that he...
Shout out to Abigail Adams, though.
Right.
And there's the Sally Hemings reference in the show as well, which is like,
So the way that he, like, recognizes that and not only presents it, but, like, ties it into the narrative and makes it, like, a moment of agency for her, I think is so fascinating. And then the other one, in terms of the pure historiographical perspective, would be The Room Where It Happened. Because the most obvious approach to something like that in history, when we're approaching it, is you would read all around it and try and find out what happened, and then you would do your best to recreate it. You know, you would say, this is what happened, this is what we think happened, these are the different options, whatever. But what he does is he acknowledges the fact that there are a lot of points in history that we are never going to know what happened. And again, he makes it the motivation for a character by saying that Burr wasn't in the room. He tells it from his point of view. He uses language like Thomas claimed and, you know, all of these different things, which is, again, so smart.
It's like, it doesn't attempt to recreate the scene, like the conversation itself. Like,
yeah, so just his grasp on that from, like, I mean, what is now a very well-informed but still, like, an amateur kind of approach is just absolutely incredible. So I wanted to, like, throw that out there before we move on. And, you know, the way that the show kind of transforms at the end to actually be about Eliza and about Eliza's legacy, I think is also a great representation of that. But we have many other things to talk about. So I want to throw it over to Ariana, because you wrote a fantastic article that we will link in the show notes about the casting of Hamilton. So why don't you talk a little bit about that for us?
Yeah, so I wrote an article that you should read, because otherwise I'll spend an hour talking about just this. But I just, this was kind of what really drew me into it. Obviously, I really care a lot about Founding Father history. It's my favorite type of history, just because it's like a soap opera, I feel like. But even though it's my favorite, I've always felt I've had a weird relationship with it, because since my family is immigrants, they're from Mexico, you know. We don't have any direct ties to that part of American history, but still I feel very close to it, and so does my family. We all watch John Adams and stuff together. But so I thought it was really interesting that in the casting, he chose to make all of the founding fathers and mothers people of color, to kind of represent the way that America looks today and how it's much more diverse. And you know, it's kind of like taking back the narrative, because it was very much a time that was ruled by white men, you know, even like you were just talking about, with their wives didn't really get a lot of say. But within this piece, that the musical, it's making it more inclusive. It's taking back the narrative, as Eliza says.
Yeah, I know that, like, even, like, some of the cast, like, you know, we assume you all watched that cast making of thing, 60 Minutes, the album thing. But, like, David and, like, some of the others, like, talking about how, like, they never felt, like, particularly tied to America, like, until they learned that, like, these stories, like, are relevant to everyone, like, to them as well. And, like, that, like, if even the cast is saying that, like, it says, like, so much you know, about like the lack previously or like, you know, the impact of this show.
Right. I think it also ties back into what we were talking about earlier about making this kind of history approachable and translating it into a modern day, and like just that, what seems like a kind of small thing of just changing basically the skin color of the cast makes it so much more
relevant.
Yeah, exactly. To a modern audience then. And that's also, it's a really interesting thing because, you know, a lot of history, as Ariana said, is made up of white men. And the struggle is that, that we get sick of hearing about white men, right? But at the same time, there are some white men whose stories are really important and like you need to find a way to translate them. So it's such an interesting thing that he's done. And, I would love to talk more about this, but you know, we have limited time. So I'm definitely going to link to Ariana's article as well.
Sorry. One more thing that I just remembered. So I just read recently that Broadway, 75% of the roles are written for white men, historically, which obviously Broadway has been around a long time. So I also think that this is really interesting that within the casting notice, like for all of the roles, except for King George, it's like, for people of color, except and King George is explicitly white. So it's saying specifically like we're also taking back Broadway in a way and making it more inclusive or trying to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's worth noting that, like, you know, we were talking about irony and it's not the casting is not in any way a gimmick. It's not ironic in that way, but there is a certain amount of commentary when you have, I mean, the dual casting obviously has been brought up in the doc, but when you have people of color playing Thomas Jefferson, who was a slaver, and George Washington, who also owned slaves, and you know, there is a certain amount of what would history have looked like if we'd have had the opportunity for, you know, diversity back then, you know.
And I think Hamilton is like a perfect example for it, because like he himself, like Ham, you know, being an immigrant, like being illegitimate, being like lower class, he was like, you know, he was kind of in the position then that like some immigrant people of color are in now, if you know what I mean. He, you know, but it was a lot worse. The entire scale was a lot worse back then, obviously, slavery, etc. But he was really like, his story is like kind of the perfect one to translate to this, obviously. And I think that, like, I didn't, and I had no idea that I'd heard of Alexander Hamilton. I had no idea he was an immigrant, like, or anything like that. I had no idea that he had, like, a shady background, like, none of that. So I see, like, perfectly why, you know, this is the story. But, you know, I think that there's also room to do it with, you know, but there's no question of, you know, Washington as well, who was, you know, respected upper-class white guy. You know, also, you know, all of the characters in this show being cast. And I'm wondering how that could translate to other shows as well. Like, I've seen colorblind casting in shows like Les Mis and stuff like that, where it's like, oh, that person's mother is white, but they're black and it doesn't matter. It's just the character they're playing. But like, that's more like literal quote unquote colorblind casting. This is more of a purposeful commentary choice. And I'm wondering like how that can translate to other shows as well, possibly.
I've heard rumors that they're
doing it with 1776. Yeah, me too.
Which is interesting because slavery is a massive theme in that show, and there's a song that basically still haunts me to this day. Like, I don't remember what it's called, like the Triangle Trade or something, but it's a very chilling song from a Southerner basically being like, hey, all you Northerners, huge hypocrites, by the way. Good show. Underrated, I think.
I have never heard anyone say that about 1776. Hamilton, it's obviously a very overt political statement as well on like the current discussion, not just current, the discussion that has continued throughout America's history about immigration.
Mm. Well, there was actually an article in the New York Times today about that. Sorry. Yeah. Mm. Just like about how Hamilton and other shows like George Takei's show
I really want to see that.
Yeah, and being like, and them just commenting, like Lynn said, like, I don't think, you know, if he specifically referenced Trump or whatever, but like, if that wasn't such a theme nowadays, like the immigrants we get the job done line would not necessarily be as you know, as much of a touchstone as it proves to be.
Right. There have been so many great think pieces about this, I have to say, from so many sites. I don't think we have enough time to go into all of the characters that we would like to speak about, but obviously, you know, we're happy to continue this conversation on Twitter or in the comments. But Michal, you brought up the dual casting, and I think that is a really interesting aspect. So did we want to talk a little bit more about that?
Well, I mean, if people don't, the guy, V. Diggs, the miracle who plays Lafayette in the first half, who is an ally of Hamilton's and an immigrant, obviously, as well, because he's French and also an underdog, comes back in the second act, having untied his hair and donned velour, basically, and he is Thomas Jefferson. The two men who die for Hamilton are John Lawrence and his son Philip, who are also played by the same person. Refresh my mind. Oh, yeah. Hercules Mulligan is like a real like gangster in the first act. He's like played like really, you know, intense, yelly. And then the guy who plays him plays Madison, and he's like soft-spoken.
Timid,
and like,
yeah.
Yeah, and like leaned over. My brother, according to my brother, he wasn't actually that old. He just kind of was like a sickly guy. So I think that was that interpretation. But it's really cool and just like makes you, after you see it, kind of consider the links between characters that you wouldn't necessarily have before.
There was one question I wanted to really ask you guys about. Basically, the relationship between Ham and Angelica in the show is you know, somewhat played up. There are parts of it that may have been true, parts of it that may not have been true. Like, what is interesting, what I discovered after seeing the show, I was very, very, very taken with the character of John Lawrence. And as soon as I sort of got, you know, into like researching the show, I was like, oh, because there is as much evidence to Hamilton having a thing with Lawrence as there is with Angelica. And it's something that Lynn has actually acknowledged as well. Like, he's acknowledged that there's like very slight references in the show. He gets involved on Tumblr and he's talked about it and he's like liked and reblogged like stuff to do with them. And there's if anyone wants to come talk to me about like their letters, there was very flowery language used back there, but this is like above and beyond. This is like not a fandom thing. This is something people have researched that they think that he was like the first queer, you know, statesman in the USA and stuff like that. So there's this sizable amount of evidence that that was a thing. And I'm just curious as to whether you think that that would have worked being played into the show, like, you know, as plausible as the Angelica thing, or if it would have detracted from, I guess, the show, you know, given that this show is very progressive, influential, would have having a queer aspect to it kind of, almost sort of cock-blocked it from getting through to people who it may be getting through to. Does that make sense? Like,
I don't think that it was taken out because it would have, like you said, made it less accessible. I think in some ways it was taken out probably because it was like too interesting. I think the same thing happened to Angelica in some ways because she's in this role. It suits the musical that she be like, you know, totally obsessed with Hamilton, but actually, you know, she was like corresponding with lots of different people, with like Jefferson and George Washington and Lafayette. And I think probably like, since you already had the love triangle with them, if you had brought in Lawrence too.
Oh yeah, there's definitely not time for
it. It would have been like too much.
Yeah, there's definitely not time for it, but I'm curious, say they had chosen to do it, like say the show had another 15 minutes or say that Angelica hadn't been a thing and that Lawrence was like the primary thing. Do you think adding a queer aspect would have made this more of like a cult show, that it would have not, you know, that people like the president or, you know, stuff like that wouldn't have been, you know, like kind of that publicly painting like one of the founding fathers as queer on a, like, would have made the show sort of less successful?
I agree.
I don't think so. But you tell me why.
I feel like there gets to be a point with history, like, where it is just all so questionable isn't exactly the right word, but like, it's all theoretical. Like, we really don't know what happened. So we are going off of like the letters we have and stuff, but like, I don't like going down that path too far, you know? Like, he definitely had an affair with,
Reynolds. That was real. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
That was real. But everything like, else is speculation.
That's what I don't like. Yeah. I don't like the speculation of being, cause like, then it could be like,
they could have had flying monkeys, which is slippery slope 100%, but like that's just my personal belief with life.
Marima, you think it wouldn't have? You think it would have worked? Or?
Yeah, I think it would have worked. I agree with Ariana that I don't think that they could have done Angelica and Lawrence.
Oh, no.
And
I agree with that.
For me, I have to say, I think they could have gone either way. And like you said, it's not, you know, it's not total speculation. Like there is definitely, you can definitely read it that, that there was something between Hamilton and Lawrence as much as you can read that there was something between him and Angelica. Like that's, it kind of depends on which books you're reading, as far as the history is concerned. But I think that, for me personally, I appreciated that the focus was on Angelica because I'm a women's historian and I liked that that allowed us to see more of the relationship between Angelica and Eliza, which we wouldn't have been able to see had the focus been elsewhere. And I don't think that it's more worthy, you know, it's not about that. I liked the way it worked out, but I don't think that that would be the most controversial thing in this show. You know what I mean? I think that's why I say that I don't think it would be necessarily less successful or more niche or more cult because there is so much else in this show to be mad about than just that.
True.
And it would be a minor aspect as well, the same way that Angelica is in, you know, in a way, a kind of minor aspect.
I'm interested to like hear you guys say like more cult. Cause I feel like it's a cult now. Like it's universally beloved, but I feel like it's still a cult, you know? Like, it's not very niche. Sorry. It's like...
I don't know. I think it's a pretty big pop culture phenomenon.
I totally agree. It's kind of mainstream.
I'm wondering if there was a show that was like... I think that, like... I love the show how it is. I don't necessarily want them to have written in the Lawrence stuff. I love the show for introducing me to Lawrence and for me now personally knowing everything about him and stuff like that. But... And I wouldn't necessarily want it in the show, but I'm wondering if it was, if it would have immediately been pigeonholed into this kind of, oh, they made this famous founding father queer, if you know what I mean. And that it would have been like, it's not like a show about queer issues that's successful like Rent. It's taking a very famous historical figure and slapping a label on him, whether it's speculation or not, that would have maybe, you know, some of American society would have not been very happy about. And I'm wondering if it would have hindered its success if it had been included instead of Angelica. I don't think that's the reason it wasn't included. I think that the story makes perfect sense as it is. I'm just theoretically wondering.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. We'll probably need to continue that conversation at a later time, though.
Come and talk to me online if anyone wants to about John Lawrence, because I have... like 3,000 words of notes and quotes that I will put into a blog post at some point.
This is Natalie sending up the John Lawrence bat signal. So get in touch with her. Well, while we're talking about Hamilton being sort of cult or niche or mainstream or whatever, Christina, you had a good question in here, which is how long do we think this is going to keep going? Like it's just getting more and more popular. I would say, it's going to sweep the Tonys.
The Hamiltonies.
I just thought of that. Has someone already made that joke?
Oh, yeah.
What? I was really
sorry.
Proud of that. Okay.
Sorry. I think it's a universal, I think that's many minds all over the world coming to the same great idea.
Okay, well, I'll take that as a mind meld and not as a stolen joke thief moment. But yeah, does anyone think that like this is going to flag anytime soon?
I don't know. Based on the evidence that the tickets just went on sale again through like what next November and most of them are already sold out. The only way.
And then they'll go on tour. And so Mm-hmm.
Apparently it's meant to do London 2017, but I don't know if that's like 100% right.
The only thing that would be, we were talking about this in our chat a little few days ago, but when Lin leaves the show, that might be cause a dull for it. But I was reading, ticket sales for the last week, and for the first time, they usurped The Lion King, which is like
actually
the top grossing one. Yeah, it brought in over $1 million, which is just mind blowing. But this train isn't slowing down anytime soon.
Yeah,
I think with Lin being replaced, that was something I was very worried about. I was like, how can they do this show without him? He is perfect. He is Hamilton. And then somebody remind me of the guy's name.
Javier Munoz, I think.
Yeah, I was reading an article about him and about how he's taken over in
Lynn's understudy.
Yes, in The Heights. And
yes, he took Usnavi in The Heights when Lynn left, and he's now the Ham understudy as well.
Right, and just how Lynn treats him as, like, the perfect person to take over for his roles, and I was reading his answers to questions that somebody was asking him, and I started to feel the same way about him as I did about Lynn, because he cares so much about it, and I think if people give him the chance, there isn't going to be anything to worry about when he eventually does take over.
He performs for all of Lynn's shows on Sundays, because Lynn doesn't perform on Sundays.
He already does it once a week, and those shows are still selling out. They might be slightly less high, you know, slightly slower to sell out, but people are still going. Like, the president's seen Javier do it and stuff like that. I think when Beyonce saw Javier do it when Lynn was sick and stuff like that. And everyone comes out of it being like, you know, wanted to see Lynn, but that was not like an understudy performance. That was that was still everything. Like, if you
know. Understudy performances are still, I mean, like, I didn't see Chris Jackson this time. I don't remember the gentleman's name, but I saw his understudy for Washington, and he was great. And, you know, obviously it's never the same. You know, Wicked has not quite been the same since Chenoweth and Menzel left, you know, but that's the nature of Broadway. Broadway moves on, and you know, it will. And I would be shocked if there is not some kind of movie in the making, just from sheer people being producers being like, there is money in this thing, you know, let us make the money. I don't know how they would do it, but I think that could be really cool.
Well, at minimum, hopefully they like do some kind of screening or broadcast like they do for a lot of other shows.
I'd prefer a theater recording than a movie, I think.
Okay, so we're going to move on. Let's talk about some of the more fun aspects of Hamilton. Not that these bits weren't fun. Brittany, why don't you explain to us what Ham for Ham is, because, you know, you won, so I feel like that's appropriate.
Cool. So Ham for Hams are these adorable little shows that take place outside the theater about 5 minutes before they draw the winner for that day. So every day before the performances, they have a lottery that happens 2 hours before, and they do a performance called Ham for Ham, where Lynn comes out and introduces other people from the cast or people from other shows around town who come, and they sing and they dance, and then they pull winners for the lottery. And when we went, they had, I forget his name, someone from Wicked. And
no, it wasn't. I've watched it back. It was Oak. It was Madison. It was Okitari.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was him.
Yeah. He sang a song from Wicked, but he's in Hamilton.
He sang a song from Wicked as Mickey Mouse. But Lynn was there, and it was awesome. And, you know, you just stand in the street and listen to it. But there are tons of Ham for Ham performances that have swept the YouTubes. And yeah, so my favorite one is they did it's in regards to the Ten Dual Commandments. They had the tech come out and call all of the like lighting cues and step cues, and that's what indicates where the actors need to start stepping. And it's so they step on the turntables at the right time so that they don't fall or get hurt or hit anyone. And so they're singing Ten Dual Commandments, and the tech director's calling all these cues out, and it's like rapid fire. And if they miss it, they fall, and it is so cool.
I saw two. I went on the last day, and they did a surprise one that I got to see, which was Lynn and Jonathan Groff singing like their elementary school chorus songs, which was really fun.
Well, yeah, I feel like the best one objectively is obviously the King George's Being the Schuyler Sisters.
Yeah.
And that is like, you can't beat that. And not even because Jonathan Groff is just so sassy and amazing, and Andrew Reynolds is like so pouty, and they're all just hilarious, but because Renee as Burr is like the greatest thing I've ever
seen. I want to see the show with her doing
That's like the greatest thing I've ever seen. And actually, but then I watched her doing the George Washington rap in Right Hand Man, and then I was like, actually, can she just play all of the male roles? Because her rapping is like my favorite thing ever in the world. Yeah.
I would love to see a gender swap of Hamilton. That would make me so happy.
Yeah.
Just come on one night and just do it.
Yeah. I also recently saw an article recently where Lin was saying that he would be totally open to having women play the Founding Fathers, the only issue, of course, being like the musical key for the songs. But if there were people who could do it or if they could change it in some way. And I feel like that would add just another layer that would be so fascinating to this.
I just want to give a shout out to the ones with Ian Loves Theater. He did one where he did both sides of one of the cabinet battles, and he, like, Lin held him on his shoulder when he was doing Ham's part, and then David held him when he was doing David's part.
Well, that's adorable.
It was really cute.
Yeah. I need to watch that immediately. That's what you need after you've listened to Act 2 of Hamilton.
Yeah, basically.
So let's jump into some listener feedback. Of course, if you want to get in touch with us about any of this stuff, we are on Twitter at HyperbuleHype. You can leave us a comment on hyperbule.com, or you can email us hype@hyperbule.com. So Marie wanted to say that she's not going to be able to listen because she's going to go green with envy because everyone's seen it. Well, Marie, I hope that you have been comforted by my silent sobbing in the corner as everyone has talked about the live show, and that's great. Leah was excited to hear all about it. Nadia wants to know, do we agree or disagree on the creator's opinion that Hamilton is the sound of revolution? I guess that the show is the sound of revolution. Does anyone know what this is about?
I don't know. That's a big statement. I haven't heard this before.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure this one. Nadia, tweet us and let us know. Is this like from an interview or something?
Like, yeah, link me to this and then I'll have an opinion.
All right. Shelley left us a comment about Right Hand Man. Oh, this is good. Everyone wanted to talk about this before. Shelley loves the Hamilton soundtrack, but her fiancé isn't sold because one of his problems was with Right Hand Man. He doesn't think it fits with how Washington was supposed to be very modest as a leader and a person in general. So we've talked a little bit about the historical accuracy already, but Karen, you picked Right Hand Man, so do you want to take this one?
I mean, I can't attest to like the historical accuracy or how much it kind of segues away from what actually happened. I think it still fits his personality. I think that later on, as he's given more power, he becomes more humble, which is really interesting. But I think that also because of how this play is set up, the fact that it is rapping and we have rap battles and all of that, it kind of goes with the territory. You kind of have to beef yourself up a little bit. And I don't personally have a problem with it, but I can also see if this is something that you're attached to with George Washington that maybe you would take issue.
George Washington is like my absolute favorite human to ever exist. And he was very modest, but he was also very commanding. I mean, he had to be to make sure that people followed him unanimously, which they did. So I think that it fits with him.
I don't think there's anything like not modest about it. It's just like, well, we're going to win the war or are we not going to win the war?
Okay, next up we have Angeli, I think, sent us an email and wanted to know about the scenes that weren't on the soundtrack. So we mentioned this a little bit at the start, but people who have seen it, did you want to talk a little bit more about, I guess, the Lauren scene?
Yeah, it's on Lin's Tumblr. If you want it, the dialogue of it is on Lin's Tumblr, and it's basically just, Ham kind of writing Eliza coming in saying there's a letter, and he goes, it's from John Lawrence. I'll read it later. And she goes, no, it's from his father. And he kind of knows, and he's like, will you read it to me? And she does, and it's basically this letter about how he was killed in a skirmish. The war was already over, and he was killed in South Carolina on his attempt to, you know, recruit black troops, and he was killed, and that, you know, that his father, IRL, was a slaver and kind of very anti what Lawrence was doing it. And so he's like, the dream for freedom for this man dies with him and stuff. And then she's kind of being like Alexander, and he's just kind of like, he kind of blacks out and he's kind of like, I have so much work to do. And then it leads into Nonstop. And it really, like, seeing that really kind of, you can tell in Nonstop that he's like kind of repressed a bit, like that he's kind of like so, like, driven and kind of repressed by, like he sort of pushes all this away. And it kind of just adds this, rather than, like, an excitement to his actions in Nonstop, this kind of, a bit more of a driven thing that comes from a sadness in a way. So that's how I describe it.
That scene has a reprise of
tomorrow there'll be more like this.
Yeah, when Lawrence is basically dressed in white and he's in lit in blue and he's on the side kind of interspersing those lines with Eliza's letter. It's feeling.
Yeah, I'll just give a shout out to Anthony Ramos, who I think is like one of the emotional hearts of the play, both as Lawrence and as Philip. Like, I think his innocence is a real unique quality for both of those roles, and I was very taken with him. So, yeah.
Okay, well, hopefully that answers your question. We might link to that scene as well in the show notes. So anyone who hasn't read it, you can check that out, and then you will kind of know the full picture of the story. Thank you guys for that description. And then finally, we have an email from Kimberly. I want to give Kimberly a shout out for sending us a very enthusiastic all caps tweet a couple weeks ago about us doing a Hamilton special. So hopefully you've enjoyed this, Kimberly, and we thought it was appropriate to end up on your email. Kimberly gets props for ending her email, "I have the honor to be your obedient servant." So that's great. And she also wanted to know all about our favorite songs and our characters and moments and things. Her favorite song at the moment is "That Would Be Enough." That's a great choice. And we've talked a bit about our favorite songs, but I feel like this would be a good time for everyone to say their favorite line from Hamilton.
I made a short list, and the short list is literally 5 pages. So, all right.
Well, that seems like a good place to start. Natalie, why don't you go first, and we can go in kind of reverse order here.
The number one that sticks out to me as just the most beautiful wordplay, and there's so many funny ones and so many sad ones, is in Burn, from Eliza quoting Angelica when she says, you know, "Do you know what Angelica said when she'd heard what you'd done? You have married an Icarus. He has flown too close to the sun." And I think it is just perfect. Like, it's just like praise hands perfect. And so that is an ongoing favorite of mine.
Mine is from the Schuyler sisters, and it's, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. And when I meet Thomas Jefferson, I'm going to compel him to include women in the sequel."
Preach.
Because,
My favorite line is, "Every American experiment sets a precedent," because we are still setting precedents today. Like, we are still an American experiment.
So deep. I love it. Karen's is also really deep and very emotional. So, what have you chosen, Karen?
Are you picking on me? Because that's not fair. No, mine is just, "Everyone give it up for America's favorite fighting French band, Lafayette." And I just love the way they say his name, and it's hilarious, and I love Lafayette.
Britt, what have you got for us?
The deepest line of the entire show. It's in the Story of Tonight reprise when Hamilton says, "No, these guys should leave." And Hercules Mulligan is like, "What?" It's the best line of the whole musical.
My favorite line is when Hamilton says at the beginning, he says, "He looked at me like I was stupid. I am not stupid." Because I just feel like that is really representative of him and why he does things. He does it. He really cares about how other people see him.
Love it. And I guess I'll finish up with, I feel like this line is really representative of the whole show and like all of the depths that it involves. "Should we honor our treaty, King Louis's head? Do whatever you want. I'm super dead." Boom. So that's it for our Hamilton special. Thank you everyone so much for coming on and sharing all your thoughts. This has been fun. Hope you guys had fun too.
Yay.
That was so fantastic. You sound exhausted. You're like, oh, I've like run a marathon right now.
Yeah, this started out with like a Twitter chain. Like one person, Christina, I think, tweeted a Hamilton lyric. Everybody jumped on, and 75 notifications later, we had a hype special in the works.
Yeah, that's all you need to do is harass us on Twitter.
I want Marima to rap out Hyperbole like to the ALEX, but you know, she's had, you know, an hour and a half to prepare that, so you wanna give it a go?
The HYPABLE .com "We are meant to be," etc.
Yeah. I think so we could make something out of that.
That is great. I can't wait for that to be on the internet. Okay, so that's it for Hype Special. We'll be back with our regularly scheduled episode this week. Make sure you let us know what you think about this. And if there's something else you'd like us to do a special episode about, let us know on all of our means of communication, which I have mentioned several times now. Okay, that's it. Thank you guys so much, and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
We have the honor to be your obedient servants.